Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
On Election Day 2024, it's November 5th. Thanks for joining us on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Good to be back with you, and thanks to Sherry Brownrigg for sitting in for me yesterday, and my amazing producer back in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Andrew Krucek, for always keeping things not under control, but running the ship for us as we do our best to bring you great Catholic programming in this segment of the EWTN lineup. And I also want to thank all the pilgrims who joined us on La Dolce Fide 2024, Italy coast to coast. We had some 50 folks, as you may have heard, as I know I was talking with you last week, and we had some special pre-recorded interviews, but talking with you every day about where we were and what we were doing. And we did get your prayer requests, those of you who sent them to me, and we took them to Mass every single day with our dynamic spiritual director, Father Frankie Cicero from the Diocese of Phoenix. You have to check out his work. You know, he has close to 1 million followers on TikTok. He's a really great communicator, the way he gets the message out about the faith. We had folks from Michigan, my home state, Ohio, Florida, California, South Carolina, Louisiana, Pennsylvania, and more. And we laughed, we cried, we celebrated together, we had really good food, drank some wine, and most of all, we had the joy of the Lord as we traveled across southern Italy. I posted a lot on Facebook, and we'll be unpacking this as the days and weeks go on. I am going to be having Father Frankie on with us to kind of share his thoughts. It was his first time to Italy. He is Italian-American, and his first time as a pilgrimage spiritual director, and he just got it right away. He has a gift for it, and we're hoping he'll join us again next year. Coming up today in the program, we are going to be talking about the election because it is Election Day. We're going to be joined by someone from my home area in the Archdiocese of Detroit. She is a dynamo for the pro-life movement and the Catholic faith. Her name is Dr. Lisa Marie Carzon, and she's an assistant professor of education and Catholic school leadership graduate program director, president of Plymouth Right to Life. Plymouth is a beautiful suburb in southeastern Michigan. They have a very active Right to Life chapter. Her resume goes on. She's president and chair of the board of a Catholic medical clinic, founder of the St. Thomas Aquinas Fund for Religious. And as Michigan's former state director for Catholic Vote, she led the nation's largest grassroots group for rallying the 2020 pro-life vote. Now, what we're going to be talking about today, two things. She actually just penned a book about the amazing Sister Deirdre, you know her, right? She's just been so outspoken and beautifully outspoken on the pro-life movement. So the book is Sister Soldier Surgeon, the release date actually this week. And the last three chapters of the book show us how to really practice what the church teaches us in terms of Catholic voting. Now, we're not going to tell you, obviously, for whom to vote. That is between you and God and your conscience. But we are going to talk about the responsibility of voting, because there's so many people in and outside the church who are saying, I'm sitting this one out. I just don't like what is presented, and I'm sitting this one out. Or they think it's fine to write in someone else who has no chance of winning. Which, in essence, as Lisa will explain, from teachings from the church and also great advice from one of our most loved and respected cardinals, Cardinal Burke, why we shouldn't be doing that. She'll explain. That's coming up right after the news on a busy Tuesday morning. And then I am so excited that we have Bishop Thomas Piprocki of Springfield, Illinois. He's joining us after he did a terrific article for the Register regarding the St. Michael prayer after Mass. So a busy morning. Good to be back with you. Thanks again for all of you who emailed us. And I know you were praying for us. We were on pilgrimage, and we were praying for you as well. Let's see what the weather has in store. The National Weather Service says there's a storm system bringing strong winds and heavy mountain snow to the Cascades into the Northern Rockies. We have Santa Ana winds and dry conditions supporting elevated to critical fire weather over coastal portions of California. And last but not least, there's a new tropical storm watch in effect. This one is for the Florida Keys from Tropical Storm Raphael. And you'll hear in the news how this is going to be possibly the next hurricane. It is 4 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for joining us on a Tuesday, Election Day 2024. Let's get the news on a Tuesday. And by the way, this newscast this morning and every morning here on Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. You can find out more information about their beautiful products at houseofjoppa.com. A big story that we're still following for you is that tragedy over in Spain. Search and rescue operations continue in the flood-stricken eastern part of the country as fresh flooding hit Barcelona. Lisa Zangarini with Vatican News explaining the ongoing efforts being done by the church as a crisis continues to unfold.
Caritas Spain, the aid arm of the Catholic Church, immediately mobilized to respond to the emergency alongside the Caritas organizations of Valencia and Albacete, supporting the affected communities in coordination with local authorities. In a message addressed to the local clergy, the Archdiocese of Valencia has announced that the annual collection for the diocesan church day will be entirely donated to the parishes affected. Thousands of volunteers have stepped forward to clear away the thick layers of mud from streets, homes, commercial establishments, and flooded churches. Among them, several priests, nuns, and young volunteers from various parts of the archdiocese. Meanwhile, Valencian parishes and local diocesan groups continue to collect clothes, food, and essential goods, while direct financial donations are requested through Caritas Valencia.
And meanwhile, a mob of angry flood victims hurling handfuls of mud and rocks at the King and Queen of Spain over the weekend as a pair visited a region ravaged by the nation's deadliest natural disaster in memory. King Felipe VI and Queen Letizia attacked while traveling to the area, the epicenter of last week's flash floods that left more than 200 dead. And more anger being fueled by the inability of officials, they say, to respond quickly enough to the aftermath. Most of the cleanup of the layers and layers of mud and debris that have buried homes and streets has been done by residents and thousands of volunteers. The other main story, of course, that we're following for you today, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump spending yesterday, the day before the election, blitzing key battleground states one last time in the 2024 campaign as it wraps up. Trump held four rallies in three states, two in Pennsylvania, one in North Carolina, and one in Michigan. Vice President Harris spending the entire day in Pennsylvania with five rallies. Pennsylvania's 19 electoral votes, the key prize among the seven all-important swing states. Brad Ford tells us police in Vancouver and Portland are working to identify the suspects who set fires in ballot boxes.
The devices that started the fires were placed outside of the steel drop boxes, but damaged ballots that were inside. The suspect was driving a Volvo, and surveillance cameras recorded the fires. A $2,500 reward is offered for information leading to an arrest in the case. The Clark County Auditor says they have seen an increase in ballots put in the drop boxes. Election staff in Clark County are watching the drop boxes around the clock.
Polls are showing, meanwhile, a very tight race just ahead of the presidential election today. The final NBC News poll released over the weekend showing VP Harris and the former President Trump locked in a dead heat, each candidate receiving 49% in the national poll. It is very close in key swing states as well. Vice President Harris holding slight leads in Nevada, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Georgia, according to recent polls. Their polling also found Trump holding the edge in Arizona, while the two candidates were tied in Michigan and Pennsylvania. And Mark Mayfield tells us podcast host Joe Rogan is endorsing the former president, Donald Trump.
Rogan made the announcement on X while promoting an interview with Elon Musk, while saying the Tesla CEO makes what he thinks is the most compelling case for Trump you'll hear. Trump sat down with Rogan for an interview last month that lasted around 3 hours.
And the Department of Justice monitoring voting in 86 jurisdictions in 27 states today. The department saying it does plan to monitor compliance with federal civil rights laws. South Dakota Secretary of State telling the DOJ they can be poll observers but may not be poll watchers, such representatives of candidates, measures, or political parties. And the tiny town of Dixville Notch, New Hampshire, continuing its tradition of casting the first in-person votes in the election. Just after midnight, those votes, all six of them, were tallied and then announced.
The president, three for Kamala Harris, and three for Donald Trump.
Over the many years of voting first, only two presidential candidates have claimed every vote among those registered in Dixville Notch, which lies about 20 miles south of the Canadian border, Joe Biden in 2020 and Richard Nixon in 1960. And abortion is perhaps the biggest state issue on the ballot as voters decide 11 measures today dealing with so-called reproductive rights. 10 states, including Arizona, Colorado, and Florida, have measures that would amend constitutions to establish a right to abortion. In other news this morning, while Tammy Trujillo takes a look at the media and the election, hundreds of tech workers at the New York Times are threatening to walk off the job.
The New York Times Guild announced Friday that in order to avoid a strike, an agreement needs to be reached before the election. The Guild says it's entered the third year of contract negotiations and is fighting for things like better wages, hours, benefits, and job security. The Tech Guild is made up of about 700 tech workers who construct the newspaper's most profitable products like its website and podcasts. A New York Times company spokesperson said that the company will work with the Guild to reach an agreement.
Pope Francis on Monday accepting the resignation of Milwaukee Archbishop Jerome Lestickey and named Chicago Auxiliary Bishop Jeffrey Grob to be his successor. With a November 4th appointment, the 63-year-old will be returning to his birth state of Wisconsin. He was born to dairy farmers in the town of Cross Plains back in 1961. Lestickey, who has served as Milwaukee's Archbishop since 2010, submitted his resignation, as Catholic News Agency explains, to the Pope on his 75th birthday earlier this year, as required by canon law. The Metropolitan Archdiocese of Milwaukee spans 10 counties in southeastern Wisconsin. That territory has some 550,000 Catholics, about 23% of the population, and 184 parishes. The Supreme Court will hear arguments in a case that could affect $1 billion a year in federal funding for hospitals. Hospitals do get some reimbursement from the Department of Health and Human Services for giving care to medical patients who are eligible for financial aid from the Supplemental Security Income Program. An Illinois hospital is arguing the payments aren't properly calculated and the Fed should pay more. HHS is arguing they are following the letter of the law. The Boeing strike is over. Workers of the International Association of Machinists Union voting Monday to accept the airplane manufacturer's latest offer, ending the most expensive U.S. strike in a quarter century. The latest offer came after two previous rejections and was approved by 59%. It will give workers a 43% raise over 4 years, but it does not include the return of a pension plan, a sticking point in previous offers. Nearly two-month-long strike estimated to have cost Boeing more than $6.5 billion. And Daniel Martindale tells us a missile test will be conducted on the coast of California either late tonight or early tomorrow morning.
The routine test launch of an unarmed Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile will take place at Vandenberg Space Force Base between 11:01 Tuesday night and 5:01 Wednesday morning. Officials say this is not related to anything happening around the world. The tests happen on a regular schedule that is made far in advance. As part of existing nuclear arms treaties, the United States will notify Russia about the test ahead of time.
And now that it's the month of November, stores have already begun their holiday sales.
They're advertising the deals earlier, and some retailers are starting them earlier.
That's Dr. Deborah Fowler with Texas Tech School of Retail Management, says that the deals start earlier and earlier every single year. And this year, she says she believes it's because of the economy. Retailers are trying to stretch out the season as much as possible so they can hit their marks. And if you're getting in on these deals, she says it is important to save your receipts. That's because as we get closer to Christmas, the sales will get even deeper. Brian Shook tells us Gen Z is turning down jobs because of expensive commutes and high rent.
A new survey for the Prince's Trust annual NatWest Youth Index 2024 among 16 to 25-year-olds in the United Kingdom shows that high prices have those just entering the workforce picky when accepting a new position. The report says the cost of living is making young people feel hopeless and anxious about their future, taking a toll on their mental health and dampening their career ambitions. One in 10 respondents who are unemployed said they've turned down jobs over expensive uniforms, work clothes, transportation, or rent.
Forecasters saying, as you heard in the weather forecast this morning, Tropical Storm Rafael expected to approach the southern U.S. sometime later this week. The storm upgraded from a disturbance in the Caribbean Monday afternoon. It's the 17th named storm of the Atlantic hurricane season. It's expected to become the 11th hurricane. The National Hurricane Center says the lower and middle Florida Keys could experience tropical storm conditions starting late Wednesday or late tomorrow night. And apparently Las Vegas is the best place to visit during the winter months. That's according to a new survey by finance website WalletHub, which found the location to be the best winter vacation destination for warm weather lovers. The study was based on several indicators, including warm weather activities, as well as attractions. And finally, in our news segment on a Tuesday morning, November 5th, Election Day 2024, John Fink tells us we're still recovering from COVID because many Americans are still finding it very tough, apparently, to make new friends.
A recent survey reveals that 39% of people haven't made a new friend in over a year, and many feel their social lives are stuck in a rut. The same survey also says that the average person only spent one-on-one time with friends they already have around 7 times in the last year. The pandemic's impact on social interactions lingers, with many still craving human contact. Experts suggest that planning group activities or trips could help rejuvenate social connections.
It is a Tuesday, but not just any Tuesday. It's November 5th, 2024. Appreciate your listenership here at EWTN Radio. We'll continue our discussion on the election following the news and following the break in just about 2 minutes. Stay tuned.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. When we said cabins are filling fast, we meant it. The 2025 cruise is sold out. But it's the Good News Cruise, not the Bad News Cruise. So the 2026 Good News Cruise is planned and taking orders. There'll be new special and surprise guests and familiar ones from Ave Maria Radio, as well as Father Michael Schmitz and Father Joe Krupp. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more.
Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. House of Joppa's mission is to share the beauty of our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith in our homes through Catholic home decor, art, candles, statues, rosaries, and Catholic jewelry. They're gifts designed to help you live out your Catholic faith. For more information, go to houseofjoppa.com. That's houseofjoppa, J-O-P-P-A.com.
More of Catholic Connection coming up on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The devil will always do his best to tempt you into sin until you get to that place where you love sin. That's what he wants. He wants you down there with him. And not because he loves you, he hates you. When you do what the enemy tempts you to do, he does it out of pure hatred.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
I've known our next guest for many years. She works so well in the pro-life movement, has done so much for the pro-life cause and education of the Catholic faith, Dr. Lisa Marie Carson. I read most of your bio, Lisa, at the top of the hour, so I didn't have to take up any more time. But if I read the entire thing, well, the interview would be over because you have quite, I must say, quite the impressive resume, my dear, but I already knew that. Welcome to the program. I know you're releasing or just have released on November 3rd a beautiful new book, Sister Soldier Surge in the Life and Courage of Sister Deirdre Burden, M.D. Amazing sister that we have. She's such a gift. First, tell us about the book. I'll let you give it a shameless plug and how we get it. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, Teresa, thank you so much. God bless you. As you know, Sister Dee Dee Byrne is just an inspiration to so many of us. I first met her 4 years ago, shortly after her appearance on the RMC stage, when she boldly defended life from the moment of conception until natural death, held her rosary in her hand for the entire nation to see, and said, "I'm not just pro-life, I'm pro-eternal life." And I have to tell you, I cheered in my living room when I heard that, as did, I think, many folks of faith who are just, you know, storming heaven for faith-based leaders to boldly and courageously permeate the public square with the truth of Christ. So in walks this beautiful nun from D.C. on that national stage, and ever since then, I have been shadowing her. So there are three sections to the book. Section one is the life and courage of Sister Dee Dee Byrne. As you know, she has a threefold calling. Not only is she a faithful Catholic sister of Holy Mother Church, but also a double board certified surgeon and family medicine doctor, as well as a retired colonel from the Army. So it shows about this beautiful marriage of those three roles
And when I say the stories are exciting, I cannot begin to tell you, in her role as surgeon, how she is literally piecing back our soldiers in the heat of battle. Patients coming in on one stretcher and their limbs coming in on another stretcher, and she's piecing them back together in the Nuba Mountains, in Afghanistan, all over the world. So section one is her life as this threefold ministry. Section two, a week in the life of Sister Dee Dee Byrne. This is a really fun section. I followed her for seven straight days, and in that 7 days, I tell about the patients she sees, three of whom were abortion reversal patients. So in 7 days, she reversed three chemical abortions. You'll get to hear the story of Abby. Of course, it's not a real name, but Abby tells the story of how she came out of Planned Parenthood, was approached by Sister, encouraged to reverse her abortion, shows up at Sister's clinic the next day, which is in the basement of her convent, by the way, and reverses her chemical abortion. I got to witness this unfolding of love right before my eyes. Abby shared with Sister, "I'm a Catholic. I haven't been to confession since I've been 9 years old. Do you think God's going to forgive me for doing this?" Sister said, "Of course. The question is, will you forgive yourself?" So we took her to confession. She asked to go to confession. We were blessed to take her over to the Basilica there in D.C. Had to wait for an hour before the priest got there for confessions, which were at 3 p.m. You won't be surprised to learn, the hour of mercy, where this beautiful, hurting woman said, I knew what I did was wrong. I just panicked. I didn't know what else to do. Came out of the confessional a new woman. So you'll get to read about some of these stories of these courageous, beautiful women in section two. Section three is living our faith in the public square. And nobody does that, in my estimation, better than Sister Dee Dee Byrne.
Yeah,
she
really
went into her chapel in 2020, that fateful August day, and prayed, "Lord, let me be your voice for life. Use me in whatever way you deem fit. I'm your gal." She came out of chapel, I'll call that her upper room, and 2 hours later got a call from the White House to be speaking about pro-life on the RNC stage in 2020.
Wow.
So it uses Sister's life as a way of calling all us Catholics out of our upper rooms beyond prayer, to follow Sister Dee Dee into the public square. And in this election cycle, coming out of the upper room means let's get out and vote.
Even though we've seen, Lisa, so much high registration in terms of people joining particular parties, a lot of activity, people really interested this time around, there seems to be a lot of Christians in the evangelical world and Catholic world that are sitting out this election. You address this in terms of our moral duty to limit evil, correct?
Yes, and I quote Cardinal Burke on that. There's a real I see four obstacles that we need to overcome here, or four considerations, shall we say, in the Catholic vote. The first is, as you say, folks tempted to sit it out thinking either that their vote won't make a difference or that they don't find either candidate, quote unquote, worthy. Cardinal Burke is very clear on this, and I'll quote what he has said in his document on our civic responsibility, number 43. Quote, "The Catholic who chooses not to vote at all when there is a viable candidate who will advance the common good, although not perfectly, fails to fulfill his or her moral duty, at least in the limitation of a grave evil in society," unquote. So this sort of gives us permission. Teresa, if we waited around for the perfect candidate, we'd never cast another vote. If somebody who perfectly upholds the moral law, we'd wait around forever.
Exactly. And the thing that's frustrating to me is, and I was challenging a listener of ours, a very nice man who was very respectful, but he basically says he's going to, I believe, if I remember correctly, because I'm obviously getting a lot of emails on the election, that he's going to write in a third candidate because he finds both main candidates deplorable. And I was saying, well, God can write straight with very crooked lines. Have you read the Bible? I mean, can you look at King David? Can you look at so many people in Scripture? King David was an adulterer, a murderer, and yet God called him a man after his own heart. How many people in Scripture started out in a very bad way but were used for greater glory?
Amen. Teresa, this idea of electability is so important. And so when you're casting a vote and considering whether or not you should write in a third party, vote third party or write in a candidate's name, there are really only two candidates currently capable of winning a presidential victory.
Mm-hmm.
So not only can that next president advance legislation that will best protect life, albeit not perfectly, but best protect life, by the way, isn't saving some babies better than saving no babies, but they can also advance the common good, protect our religious freedoms, and very importantly, nominate Supreme Court justices and other judges who will shape the future nation our children and grandchildren will inherit and the battles these kids will have to fight for decades into the future. So
not even looking at the whole transgender issue and everything else having to do with that. More with Dr. Lisa when we return. We'll also put a link to her book, which just released, Sister Soldier Surge in the Life and Courage of Sister Dee Dee Byrne, M.D. We'll be right back on a Tuesday morning election day. Catholic Connection. Stay tuned.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Saint Jose Maria Escriva says that we are called to light up the pathways of this earth by being sowers of peace and joy. This comes from being aware that we are sons and daughters of God. On the road of life, though, we find dangers. But God walks with us every step of our life, pouring out the gifts of His Holy Spirit upon us. Our Lady is our companion, like GPS in our car, connected to the cloud and bringing the latest updates to help us navigate our journey and get out of traffic on the way to the eternal kingdom. We don't want to get into family fights on our way to God's vacation destination, but we should be the sowers of peace and joy. We shouldn't accept substitutes, accept only the authentic identity of being His children, His sons and daughters. Let's grow in happiness and bring peace to those around us. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
What is prayer? The Catholic Catechism defines prayer simply as the raising of our mind and heart to God. Humility is the foundation of prayer. When we pray, do we speak from the height of our mind and will, or from the depths of a humble and contrite heart? It is only when we acknowledge that we do not know how to pray as we ought, are we then ready to receive the gift of prayer. St. Augustine points out that when we come to the well seeking water, Christ comes to meet us. He first seeks us and asks for a drink. His asking arises from God's desire for us. God's thirst encounters our thirst. He thirsts that we may thirst for Him. Where does prayer come from? Scripture most frequently cites the heart. If the heart is far from God, the words of prayer are in vain. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Dr. Lisa Marie Carzon has published a book with Sophia Press. Our friends at Sophia do such a wonderful job. Sister Soldier Surgeon, the Life and Courage of Sister Dee Dee Byrne, M.D., and you've got a website all set up and people can order it there, correct?
Yes, www.sistersoldiersurgeon. By the way, those are all in alphabetical order, S-I-S-O-S-U, sistersoldiersurgeon.com. The Buy Now button takes you to Sophia's website. But the fun thing about the website is that it also shares some special pictures of Sister Dee Dee, so I think folks will enjoy the website. But Teresa, if I could just finish up on the third party voting. Anybody tempted to write in to write in a candidate or vote third party, for those folks who have no real chance of victory, please, please keep in mind that reduces the possibility of advancing our Catholic values in society, as well as the appointment of future Supreme Court justices who would do the same. So I'm just a sort of a clarion call to Catholics to vote for the one of the two electable candidates who will best advance the common good, best limit abortion, best advance our religious freedoms.
In terms of some of the amendments out there, what are you seeing? I mean, you're so active in the pro-life movement with Plymouth Right to Life in southeastern Michigan and your background. What are you seeing in the states that have these abortion amendments, Lisa?
I'm nervous, Teresa. We have 10 states that we're looking at currently. Florida is a big, big deal. Some people have equated the victory or the race for the amendment in Florida as equivalent to even the presidential race. So we've got to take at least one or two of these battles, but I'm a little nervous. You probably know in Florida there's a 60% threshold,
right?
That's going to be somewhat helpful. But this idea of prioritizing social justice issues on the pro-life spectrum is critical. It's also another impact, another factor in the Catholic vote. I remember in 2020 trying to rally Catholics to move the pro-life vote, and folks would say to me, you know, I think that the Democratic Party advances more, a greater number of the pro-life spectrum factors. But what they weren't, you know, they were considering things not only just pro-life, but immigration, health care, assistance for the needy. Mm-hmm. But the church is very clear. The right to life makes all other rights possible. JP2 and Christe Fidelis Leci says the right to health, to home, to work, to culture is false and illusory if the right to life, the most basic and fundamental right, and the condition for all other rights is not defended with maximum determination. So prioritization is critical. Pro-life voters are not single-issue voters. They are ones who prayerfully and rightly order all the issues on the whole life spectrum, mindful that the right to be born is foundational for subsequently advancing all those other social justice issues about which we are also very deeply concerned.
Right, because we're pro-life from womb to tomb, and it's interesting that those who are so pro-abortion, and my wonderful producer Andrew was telling me, and we just came back from our pilgrimage through Italy, and we're still here, he said that I was blessed not to hear all these abortion commercials or ads, political ads, because he said it was non-stop. And so they call those of us who are pro-life single-issue voters, and yet all they want to talk about is abortion. They don't even look at the bigger issue of life as we do in the church from womb to tomb.
Yeah. Right, right. I would just like to make one more Cardinal Burke quote that maybe will give people permission. Quote, a Catholic may vote for a candidate who, while he supports an evil action, also supports the limitation of the evil involved if there is no other better candidate. Catholics who recognize the immorality of abortion may rightly vote for this candidate over another more unsuitable candidate in an effort to limit the circumstances in which abortions would be considered legal. This is not a question of choosing the lesser of two evils, interestingly, but of limiting all the evil one is able to limit at that time, unquote. Mm-hmm. Cardinal Burke. So hopefully this gives people a freedom of conscience to go out and vote for the very clear choice in this election.
In terms of what you're seeing across the country, what are you hearing? You mentioned Florida. That's huge. There are some other states that are trying to also get it enshrined into their constitution. And I think it's in, is it Nebraska, where they have two different amendments?
Nebraska, too.
Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, if we were to prioritize my hope for victory, it would be number one, Florida, number two, Nebraska.
Okay.
And we just need to pray and fast for all of them, but those two in particular, and for all of them, certainly, but those two I would say we're most hopeful about at present. But, you know, Teresa, the whole pro-life movement is going to look different. Regardless of who wins, it's going to look different after this election. And Sister Dee Dee reflects this, right? It's switching maybe to a more woman-focused approach of accompanying the hurting women in this equation and helping them understand that their real freedom, their identities, and this goes for our young girls too, are as daughters of the King. So much of society is our kids are finding their identities in all the wrong places. And when we can accompany these women with love, as Sister Dee Dee so beautifully does, and with a disarming love in a way that makes them want to share their stories and want to reach out and want to learn about beauty, truth, and goodness and what God intends for them, that God intends for them a freedom beyond their wildest expectations that can only be had if they realize this true identity. So I think accompanying the hurting woman is going to be a new focus in the pro-life movement moving forward. The other big thing in the pro-life movement moving forward is going to be the abortion reversal pills. So, at the Heart of Christ Clinic and many other clinics around the nation, and Sister Dee Dee in D.C., is all we're all striving to help women reverse that chemical abortion within the first 72 hours. So that can be done. Sister Dee Dee does it above the nation's average is about 2/3 of the babies that they can save with this chemical reversal within the first 72 hours. Sister Dee Dee runs even close to an 80% success rate. So she's
wow.
even doing, yeah, it's incredible. So this mailing of abortion pills, even over state lines, people are going to be able to have an abortion through the mail.
Yeah, so how crazy is that? And they're different. Talking about reproductive health. This is what is so ridiculous. They talk about reproductive health. First of all, as I always say, there's nothing reproductive about abortion. And how can it be healthy when you are having this happen to you in your home and so many complications can occur and then your home becomes the abortion mill and the psychological trauma? I mean, it's all been researched and the documentation is there about the problems that accompany this type of a situation. Lisa, thank you so much for your strength and your witness and for this beautiful book published like our friends at Sophia. We'll give you one more chance to let us know where the website is and how we can find the book.
www.sistersoldiersurgeon.com. Please order the book. Long story, some other time. They tried to cancel it. We need to have everybody ordering the book. Every net proceed goes to Sister Dee Dee and her ministry. And get out and vote. There is a clear choice. Please, no third parties, no write-ins. Get out and vote for the person who will best limit evil and best protect our religious freedoms so that we can, praise God, advance our Catholic values in this culture.
Lisa, thank you so much. Sister Soldier Surgeon, The Life and Courage of Sister Dee Dee Byrne, MD, published by our friends at Sophia Institute. And you can also go to their website and the EWTN Religious Catalog. Up next, Bishop Thomas Paprocki of Springfield, all about defending the St. Michael prayer at the end of Mass. He wrote a beautiful piece for the Register recently, and he's joining us in just a few minutes. Stay tuned.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John 14. This is Jesus in the upper room with the disciples before he's going out to his sacrifice of himself for our salvation. And Philip says to the Lord, "Show us the Father, and we'll be satisfied." Jesus looks at Philip and says, "Philip, have I been with you all this time? Don't you understand? When you see me, you're looking at the Father." In fact, only two people throughout human history have given rise to the question, not who is he, but what is he? The two people are Buddha and Jesus. Buddha's answer was, don't come to me, don't look to me, look to my doctrine, look to what I teach. Jesus' answer was, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart. Jesus is explicitly claiming to be God.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What's looking back at you at age 22? What do you hope to say about that child at age 22? If you're content to say, well, the way kids are turning out nowadays, counting my blessings. Parole officer says one of the nicest children he has. Or would you rather say he's 1 in 100? Morals, compassion, seeks God. Are you prepared to be a 1 in 100 parent then? You can't parent like the bulk of parents anymore. You will supervise far higher. You will screen out toxic media sewage at a rate unlike all of your friends, perhaps your family. No guarantees as to what will be looking back at you at age 22. But you want to be able to say, I think he's 1 in 100. Then you be a 1 in 100 parent.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John, chapter 8, verse 51. Jesus is in a discussion with some of the leaders of the Jews. They're talking about Abraham. Abraham lived 1,500 years before the time of Jesus. So in the course of the discussion, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." He says that often in the Gospels. "He who keeps my word or believes in me will never die." To which the Jews say, "Now we know you have a demon." And they say, "Abraham died, as did the prophets, all the patriarchs, the great men and women of the history of Israel. All these people died, and you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death? Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets, who died?" And Jesus says, "Your father Abraham rejoiced that he was to see my day. He saw it and was glad." To which the Jews say, "You are not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham?" And Jesus answers, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am."
It's an important Tuesday, November 5th, 2024, Election Day across the country. Get out there and vote. In the meantime, though, hope you stay tuned right here because we have a great interview. So honored to have Bishop Thomas Fabrocki of the Springfield, Illinois Diocese on with us this week. Actually, a couple of days ago, he just wrote a beautiful piece in the Register responding to a letter in the Wall Street Journal from a priest objecting to praying the St. Michael's Prayer at the end of Mass. So the piece that is including the article with Bishop Thomas Pibrocki was posted on November 2nd at the National Catholic Register website. We will put a link to it on the archive section of Catholic Connection after the program. The title of the article, "Bishop Defends St. Michael's Prayer After Mass, The Devil Has No Influence." Your Excellency, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for standing up for St. Michael's Prayer. So let's talk about this in terms of, give us some background on the story, how it developed.
Well, this started with a column that was written in the Wall Street Journal. It's interesting, this conversation has been going out in a newspaper like the Wall Street Journal, a more secular publication, but they do have a column on Fridays called Houses of Worship. And Father Raymond D'Souza, who is a priest in Canada, he's a frequent columnist in the National Catholic Register, and he wrote this Houses of Worship column, in which he just mentioned that Donald Trump had said the St. Michael prayer, made reference to the St. Michael prayer without comment on September 29th, which is the feast day of the Archangel Saints Michael, Gabriel, Raphael. And then Father D'Souza went on to say that he says the St. Michael prayer after Mass in his parish, which many parishes do, and we've been doing this in the Diocese of Springfield in Illinois for over 10 years now. And many other dioceses are doing this, but it was interesting that a priest wrote a letter to the editor objecting to saying the prayer to St. Michael, basically claiming that we shouldn't be adding prayers to the Mass. And so I was responding to that letter, and because I figured, well, I didn't want him to have the last word and have people thinking, well, we shouldn't be saying the St. Michael prayer. And so the point in the letter was the St. Michael prayer was suppressed in 1964, when there was the changes that came about in the liturgy, but it's not exactly accurate to say that. So what happened in 1964 was the Sacred Congregation of Rites said that the Leonine prayers, as they were called, these were the prayers that of Pope Leo XIII, were suppressed, and the Leonine prayers included three Hail Marys, the Hail Holy Queen, the prayer of St. Michael, the prayer for the Church. They were prayers that we prescribed to be said at the end of a low Mass. And by saying they were suppressed simply meant that they're not prescribed anymore. This priest that wrote seems to be implying that they're suppressed means that they're forbidden. You can't say these prayers at the end of Mass. And so I pointed out that the Mass is ended when the priest or deacon says, "Go in peace, the Mass is ended." And then after Mass is where we're saying the prayer to St. Michael. And there are many prayers that people pray after Mass together as a congregation. Many people, many congregations will stay after Mass and say the Rosary together. Well, you know, the Rosary, the Hail Mary, was one of the Leonine prayers, but certainly is not suppressed. So I was simply pointing out that I don't think there's anything wrong with saying the St. Michael prayer. In fact, I think it's a very good thing to do.
I do, too. And wasn't he inferring also, in the article, in the opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, that this is something that is taking away from the Mass, and it's a private prayer, and yet you're saying it in public with the congregation, and you don't have to say it if you don't want to. It's after Mass.
Yes, exactly. It's after Mass, and he also seems to be falling into a kind of a Protestant theology here that we shouldn't be praying to saints or angels, that we pray directly to God, and you know, we've just received Jesus and Holy Communion, and so that should be good enough, and we're at the end of Mass, we should go out and we're celebrating the heavenly kingdom. And I point out in my response, well, we're not in the heavenly kingdom yet. We're on our way there, hopefully. And in the meantime, we have battles to fight here on earth. And so it's through the intercession of the saints and the angels that we fight these battles. And to point out, the prayer of St. Michael, in fact, invokes God's help when we're praying. Then we do with all of the prayers, you know, we invoke the help of the saints, but we're doing that only through God's grace. So it's not like somehow we're bypassing God and just relying on the angels. I mean, we say in the prayer to Saint Michael, to defend us in battle, be our defense. But then we say also, may God rebuke him, the devil. And we
humbly pray.
Thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God.
By the power of God, right.
So we're definitely invoking, you know, the saints to intercede for us. But in the end, it's God's action and God's grace that is going to be powerful here.
We're talking with Bishop Thomas Pabrocki of Springfield, Illinois, about the St. Michael prayer after Mass. And I was so glad in the Register article that they printed the prayer as well. I was telling you, Your Excellency, Deacon Dom and I just wrapped up a trip where we were actually in the Gargano area at St. Michael's Cave, and it's very, very profound to be there. And the day we were there, it was very interesting. The readings are from Ephesians chapter 6, put on the armor of God. So I'm thinking, okay, that's an affirmation for what we're doing, what we're trying to do on this pilgrimage to encourage people to, you know, reconnect with the church and reconnect with the saints. What concerns me about this going in such a large publication as the Wall Street Journal, as you said, is that people can get the wrong idea and then, heaven forbid, think they're doing something wrong or incorrectly according to church teaching when they're calling on the intercession of the saints and angels.
Yes, and I've encountered this attitude. I think that what the priest was writing here was indicative of, I've encountered this also with some other priests in my own diocese. So here in our diocese, I did not mandate the prayer to St. Michael. I mentioned it. Actually, it was in my installation homily when I was being installed as Bishop of Springfield in Illinois in 2010. And I kind of laid out a vision where I saw for our diocese that we would have lots of vocations to the priesthood and religious life and the sacrament of matrimony. We'd have good, strong Catholic families of people going to Mass every week. And I said, there's no reason why we can't do that. The only reason that vision cannot come about would be because of sin. And then I just mentioned in passing, I said, you know, Pope St. John Paul II has encouraged us to say the St. Michael prayer. So, you know, perhaps we could say that. So it was just a suggestion. My chancellor at the time, Mrs. Marlena Mulford, came up with the idea that printing up prayer cards, she had 50,000 prayer cards printed up with the prayer of St. Michael. We distributed them around the parish. And again, it was just a suggestion, but I think there's out of 129 parishes, maybe there's less than a handful that don't say the Mass, the prayer to St. Michael after Mass. And but I think for some of them that don't do that, it's kind of the thinking, well, we're adding something to the Mass, and you know, we're not supposed to like add in prayers, or when that's a problem sometimes when you get the celebrant of the Mass is kind of making things up as he goes along. He's making up his own prayers instead of what's in the Missal. That's a problem. We shouldn't do that.
Right.
But again, what we're talking about here is not changing any prayers in the Mass and actually not adding to the Mass. We're saying a prayer after Mass. And so I think that's a very powerful thing to do.
And what you're doing and encouraging the people in your diocese to do is to practice church teaching, which tells us that, as it says in Hebrews, that we have a great cloud of witnesses.
Yes, and I found that the popularity of this prayer, I've noticed even amongst young people, sometimes you'll have teenagers or young adults who are just there. I'm happy they're there, but they kind of look bored during Mass. But when it comes to the St. Michael prayer, they're belting it out because they realize the power of that prayer. So, again, as I mentioned, we had 50,000 cards printed up. Well, within a few months, nobody needed to use the cards anymore. They all had it they had it memorized. And in some cases, if I would forget to start the prayer at the end of Mass, people just started it on their own. And that just shows the popularity of the prayer and how important it is to many people.
Do you think, Your Excellency, we're doing better overall in the church of really encouraging folks to embrace the saints and the angels and take them off the shelves? I mean, we grew up, if we're cradle Catholics, with those beautiful images, and we see them in our churches, hopefully, and many of us saw them in our homes. But do we really embrace, do you think, the saints and the angels well enough in our walk with the church and the Lord?
Well, I think it depends. I think, you know, there are certainly Catholics that are very devout in the practice of the faith, and they see the importance of the intercession of the saints and angels. At the same time, I would say there is some concern on my part that I've been noticing recently, just in terms of baptismal names. There more and more people are using secular names for their children, and you know, instead of naming their child after a saint or some biblical figure, they want their name, their children's names, to be unique and something that's not at all recognizable as anything religious. And I think that's unfortunate. I think that reflects the secularity of our society. And, you know, years ago, I'm named Thomas John. And actually, I think that was a wonderful thing that my parents gave me those names, because I asked them once, you know, what, do they have any particular saints in mind with that, and they said no. So that kind of gave me the freedom to decide, well, who's going to be my patron saint? There are a number of Thomases, there are a number of Johns, and
right.
So in that regard, I was able to kind of think and say, well, maybe Thomas the Apostle or Thomas Aquinas. I finally settled on Thomas More as a lawyer and chancellor, and then when I became a bishop, St. John Fisher, who was martyred together at the same time, more or less, with St. Thomas More. He was a bishop. He was the only bishop in England that who stood up to King Henry VIII, so he's a great sign of a courageous bishop who stood for the faith. So, I mean, for me, that's been very powerful to have patron saints like Thomas More and John Fisher, and to look up to them and pray for their intercession. So I think that's something that, unfortunately, we're losing when parents are not naming their children with saints' names, that they're missing out on an opportunity to give something very helpful to their children to be strong in the faith.
In addition, Your Excellency, to the saints you just mentioned, do you have other favorite saints?
Well, my confirmation name is Joseph, and so, yes, I look to Joseph. I had an uncle who was named Joseph. My father was John, so I'm Thomas John Piprocki, Thomas John Joseph in there. Another, I mentioned already, Saints Thomas More and John Fisher are my patron saints, and I have great devotion to Pope St. John Paul II, not only because he was Polish, and I'm Polish-American myself, and but also just the great witness that he gave as Pope. I was ordained a priest in 1978, and May of 1978, and 5 months later, he was elected Pope, and then he was my Pope for the next 26 and a half years, so I certainly got into the habit of celebrating Mass for Holy Father John Paul II, and a great influence on my priesthood, and then he's actually the one that appointed me to be a bishop, so when he appointed me to be auxiliary bishop of Chicago in 2003, I met him several times when I was a student. I studied in Rome from 1987 to 1991. My parents came to Rome, my siblings and I, pitched in to send them to Rome for their 40th wedding anniversary in 1988. We had Mass at the Pope's summer residence at Castel Gandolfo. My dad did the reading of the Mass. And I have a beautiful picture of my folks and Pope John Paul II wishing them a happy 40th anniversary. And then when I did become a bishop, we had the bishops every few years meet with the Holy Father. It's called an ad limina visit. And so I did that in 2004. With John Paul II. In fact, I have a pectoral cross, the cross that a bishop wears. It's called a pectoral cross, which comes from the Latin word pectus, which means chest. I wear that close to my heart. So I have this. He appointed me a bishop, and I have this cross. We had a conference that they do every year for new bishops, and at the end of the conference, he gave each of the bishops a cross.
We're out of time, Your Excellency. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but thank you so much for your faithfulness and all you do to defend the church and the saints and the angels. Bishop Piprocki, we'll be right back.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Thanks so much for tuning in. God bless you for supporting and listening to EWTN. Go out and vote and make a difference. And we look forward to talking to you tomorrow with Joan Lewis and more. See you then. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.